Welcome to Intentional Compliance in Higher Ed, the University of North Carolina at Pembroke's Office of Title IX and Clery Compliance podcast. I'm Ronette Sutton-Gerber, Director of the Office of Title IX and Clery Compliance. And in these podcasts, my campus investigator, Danielle Evans, we call her Danny, will join us. And sometimes our case manager, Anna Rivers, will be with us too. This podcast is a discussion about institutions of higher education efforts to comply with Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972, the Jean Clery Disclosure of Campus Security Policy and Campus Crime Statistics Act of 1990, also known as the Clery Act, and the Violence Against Women Act, as reauthorized in the Clery Act. In this podcast, we will talk about campus safety, sex and gender-based discrimination, sexual harassment, and sexual violence. We will discuss investigations, hearings, the rights and options provided to parties, and supportive measures. We will talk about Clery geography and Clery crimes and statistics. We will also talk about timely warnings and emergency notifications and the annual security and fire safety report. And we will talk about Title IX regulations. We believe that in the spring of 2024, the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights will issue new Title IX regulations affecting how colleges and universities handle sex and gender-based discrimination, sexual harassment, and sexual violence. But we'll get to that when we have to. While Danny, Anna, and I always have much to discuss, we will sometimes invite others to join us in these conversations. These folks may be our campus partners here at UNC Pembroke, our colleagues within the University of North Carolina system, or from our professional associations. Now, I do need to apologize. I thought I would have had more podcasts uploaded by now, but life and work does get in the way, so I'm truly sorry. As we continue our podcast, we will occasionally invite a few of UNC Pembroke's former women student athletes and athletic staff who, because of Title IX, were able to make their mark on this university. These folks will join us to discuss their experience at UNC Pembroke, or what was back then Pembroke State University. Today's guest is Coach Dee Hardy from Fayetteville, North Carolina's E.E. Smith High School, or Dee Major, as she is affectionately remembered by fans of Pembroke State University's women's basketball and volleyball teams. As an All-American women's basketball player for the Pembroke Braves from 1981 to 1985, Coach Hardy amassed 1,555 points and was the 1984-1985 NAIA All-American honoree. She was also a two-time All-Conference and two-time All-District honoree. In volleyball, she was twice the Conference Carolinas Player of the Year for both her junior and senior years, and was three times All-Conference and twice All-District. Coach Hardy is the only volleyball player at Pembroke to have her jersey retired, and in 1995, she was inducted into the UNC Pembroke Sports Hall of Fame. Now, after nearly four decades as the coach of the girls' basketball team at E.E. Smith High School, Coach Hardy can look back on some very successful teams and many years of significant accomplishments. She and her teams have had multiple winning seasons, playoff appearances, and conference championships, and she has won numerous awards for Coach of the Year. In 2011, she was inducted into the Fayetteville Sports Hall of Fame, and in 2018, E.E. Smith High School named its basketball court in her honor. In 2020, Coach Hardy led her team to its first North Carolina High School Athletic Association Regional Championship. In 2021, she was awarded the Toby Webb Outstanding Coach Award, the first coach from Fayetteville, North Carolina, to win this prestigious award, which is given annually to only two coaches in the state who have so impacted the lives of their student athletes, encouraging them to succeed in sports and academics, and helping them to develop self-confidence, ambition, and a sound work ethic so they can become successful beyond athletics in high school. And this is evident in the fact that so many of her student athletes have succeeded in college and more than 70 of them have become successful collegiate athletes. While Coach Hardy has had tremendous success as a student athlete and coach, she has also been successful as a wife and mother. She is married to Marlon Hardy, and they have three children, Alicia Hardy, Shatanya Ave Reed, and Jackson Hardy. Both Alicia and Ave played basketball at UNC Pembroke, and Ave is our women's assistant basketball coach. Now, given who Coach Hardy is, it is no wonder she is exceptionally proud of her efforts at Pembroke, her teams at E.E. Smith High School, and her family. And I am very interested in speaking with her and learning about her experience as a student athlete here at Pembroke and coaching at her alma mater, E.E. Smith High School. I hope you enjoy our conversation with Coach D. Hardy. So good afternoon, and continuing our discussion on Pembroke State University and UNC Pembroke's women's sports, and speaking with those who are on or have been on our coaching staff and some of our former female student athletes. Today, we are speaking with Dee Hardy, who some of you may have known as Dee Major back in the 80s. So welcome, Dee. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here today. I'm excited.
So, and with me is, again, Danny Evans, who is the campus investigator here at UNC Pembroke. And I'm going to start with a question for Dee, kind of a basic question. Why did you come to Pembroke State University?
Well, I came to Pembroke State University on an athletic scholarship. My reasoning for coming, I guess it was twofold. I had a brother that attended there and ran track and field. And during that time, I had the opportunity to come up and see the campus a little bit, meet some of the student athletes here on campus. So knowing that, when Linda Robinson and Tommy Thompson came in the picture and asked if I wanted to be a part of the family, I jumped on that opportunity. I knew that Pembroke was built on a foundation that gave me a sense of family. And the high school that I came from, E.E. Smith High School, we were really big on family. So I think it was a great decision. My reason for coming was playing sports, knowing it's going to be a family atmosphere, knowing it was a small campus that was a jewel that would take care of me.
Dee, so can you tell us about your experience when you got to what was Pembroke State University?
Oh, well, I'd already been there before. You know, I got the opportunity to come up during homecoming, which for some, that would be a false sense of what the campus is like because there's a lot of activity and all that. But because of my brother being there, I had an opportunity to really meet some of the students and the student athletes. I didn't necessarily know the professors, but I knew the students. I just was excited. You know, the experiences, the laughs and the jokes among the student athletes, and then the conversations with the faculty and staff. It was excellent.
I'm always so impressed by our student athletes because they're juggling so much. I mean, I could barely make it through just academics, not being an athlete myself. How did you manage, I mean, the social life, the athletics, the academics, how did you manage all that as a young person?
Well, I think with athletics is a plus because it gives you a schedule and you have to be able to manage your time. So we didn't have a lot of time to explore all the social life activities, which that's what I needed. I needed a focus. I needed something small where I couldn't venture off campus too much and get into a lot of other things. So it was a perfect fit for me. For most athletes, if they're going to be successful, you know, they have the rigor of the athletics, but you also have that academic rigor, and then you have to try to piece in the social life, which most of the time it becomes your friends from the team, basically.
Now, Dee, you were, I think, I will say this conservatively, a standout player here at Pembroke, both with basketball and with volleyball. And I'm curious to know what it was like as a standout player, someone who did exceptionally well. How were you able to deal with the male student athletes in their respective teams who are also standout athletes?
Well, for me, I think I was a bit naive coming in. I did not really think that I was a standout athlete. I grew up competing with my brother, and I was just trying to keep up with him as well as the standout athletes from the high school. And when I got to Pembroke, you know, I just kind of had the same philosophy. So I would go to the gym and be there with all males, you know, and I was just trying to get an opportunity to get on the court and showcase, and at the same time not be the weak out there. So because of other, I didn't get when I went to gym. But they still pushed me to the side as the female. You know, nobody really wants to play and have the female on their team and all of that stuff. So I went through that, and for the most part, they accepted me. I was pretty much known as my brother's little sister. So I just had to fight my way from there.
That's called making a name for yourself, which you certainly did.
Thank you.
So let me ask you about your experience as a student athlete. When you were dealing with your practice times, your playing time, your materials, understanding that Title IX is supposed to be all about equity, not necessarily equality, but equity. What was your sense when you were a student athlete and what you were provided?
As a student athlete, you definitely don't know all of what goes on the backside. I just know that we had our practice times, and I can remember the coaches commenting on trying to get a time to fit in, where the males had the priority on which time they wanted for the facility. And then we had to kind of fill in where there were open gaps. And then from time to time, you know, the coaches would have to go in and have discussion to try to get to this conflict where we couldn't get all of the athletes in for practice. Obviously, we had to be low to get in where we could fit.
And I think you're absolutely right. As a player, you don't see the struggles that I think your coaches were having to fight for playing time or fight for practice time, making sure you guys had the equipment that you needed, which I think in the 80s is much different now. I think our students are a little more aware and a little more vocal maybe about making sure that they're being treated the same as some of our male student athletes and our male teams.
Well, that's correct. I can remember our having a set of practice gear and socks, and you know, with our sneakers, you got the one pair of sneakers, and you just had to make sure you got your size so you could have something to fit in with the team. And the guys seemed like they were able to just get the shoes whenever they wanted to. And at that time, I think it was Converse that we were going through playing in. So we didn't have a lot. The guys definitely had their practice gear. They had the ball and all that stuff. We had to make sure we took care of our gear. And I can recall, you know, after season, most of the time the males were able to just keep the gear that they had. We had to turn our gear back in, and they recycled.
So how did your experience at Pembroke State prepare you for your role at E.E. Smith?
Well, I learned a lot at Pembroke. I was very attentive. I paid attention to the things that I did like and the things that I did not like. I did notice, you know, and it's for any sport, and I think this stands true today, that most people gravitate towards the male sports. So you're going to get a huge following and a lot of support with the males. And the females are just kind of the diehard fans, either the parents or siblings or someone that grew up watching the sport. And then your true sportsmen paid attention to the female athletics. So in knowing that, going to the high school, I definitely wanted to make sure I had an inviting atmosphere and that I reached out to try to get everybody involved. I knew going in I would have to fight tooth and nail for everything that the females got. And I can recall my first year going there as a head coach, meeting down to discuss a budget. And my budget consisted of 2 basketballs. That's what I got for the season. And, you know.
So no budget, no money, but you're 2 basketballs.
2 basketballs. And they said, that's what I got. And with that, you know, the men's team, they got meals. They had practice gear. Oh, definitely. They had more than 2 balls. So I probably still have those basketballs today. That taught me to hold on to everything that I got and make sure that I took care of it. So.
Oh my gosh. I am just floored by that. And so what are some of the challenges you see even now with women's athletics, or I guess even in high school?
Yeah, well, with high school, I was very fortunate this season. My cousin played with University of South Carolina. She was a point guard there. So I had an opportunity to travel and kind of watch at that level as well. So what I have noticed is it's definitely a difference. You know, as I said, the fan base is totally different. For the high school, we've been successful over the years. You know, we've gone through and won a state championship. Actually, we did the state championship during the COVID year. So there was celebration, you know, but with our guys team, they started showing success and, you know, everybody's coming out of the woodworks. They want to take them out to dinner. They want to, you know, feed the teams. They want to buy shirts for them. They want to do. Whereas, you know, we were coming off of a state championship and, you know, people were very nice to us, but we didn't get half as much as what the men's team received as far as appreciation for their accomplishment. So that's always been, you know, I would say for the collegiate level going up to watch South Carolina, and I didn't attend the game when LSU and Iowa played, but I did go there to the hotel afterwards. And I thought it was going to be a huge celebration, you know, after the game. And when we got there, people were waiting. They had an area in the hotel, kind of like a bar area and a waiting area. And there was really nobody there. There's a couple of people sitting around. And, you know, I was expecting the team to come down and it'd be a big hoopla, you know, just celebration.
Yeah.
There was nothing. And it was really interesting to me with that. I'm like, this is a national championship. And I can recall maybe 1 or 2 players came down and maybe they planned something elsewhere. But, you know, I've been to other areas where they had celebrations. My brother played football at NC State, and this was back in the 90s. And when they advanced to the bowl games, I can remember walking to the hotel. And if it were Embassy Suites, just imagine Embassy Suites in that lobby. You could not see anything but the greenery and then red and white. It was packed all the way up to the top floor. And they were waiting for the team to arrive to play. It wasn't even a championship. So knowing that and then watching the LSU version, it was just very interesting. You know, definitely that even based on the women's game, made history. They sold out and had a huge attendance this year. But all the accolades and everything on the backside is totally different.
Do you think that student athletes have just become accustomed to this? That there's not an expectation that I should even go down to the lobby, that there would be people there?
I don't know. I don't know if it's a standard that we've created because, you know, in the past, I would say, you know, it's the males and the men with the sports and all that. But females, we're doing the same thing. We support the men's teams. We kind of, okay, we'll come to the girls' game, you know, or just kind of support a little bit. So I don't know if it's just a standard that we've set, if it's just expectation, something that we've just grown to be accustomed to, because that's the way that it has been, you know. I'm not really sure what it is. I just know that it's there, it's still existing. It's gotten a little bit better, but if you look at any sport at any level, you see the same thing. You see the men, and then you look at the women. It's kind of like, it's kind of throw something out there to kind of keep them going.
Right. And I'm thinking of tennis, just and even professional tennis, where for so many years, a championship in tennis for your dollar amount, so much less than what the men are going to earn on the same court, selling out the same seats. But they're going to make far more than the women will make in their championship. I would like to think that on this campus, particularly with our athletic teams, that there is more support, that our teams are supporting each other and going to each other's events. We did see that some with basketball, with our football team showing up for the basketball games and supporting the basketball team, because I will say they showed up for the men's team. They were there, and our women's team did very well, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But I do want to ask you first about some statistics that I learned this week about women coaches. And you know, as a coach yourself, in a report from the Women's Sports Foundation on 50 years of Title IX, they had some what I think are very scary statistics on the decline of women coaches, both as head coaches and as assistant coaches. And they said that in 1970, 1971, 90% of women's teams had a woman as a coach. But in 2021, for women teams, only 41% had a woman as their head coach. And only 28% had assistant coaches. And for Black and Indigenous people of color, for women's teams, only 7% had a woman as a head coach. And for both men and women's team, only 7% were assistant coaches. And these are some, I think, some very drastic numbers that show just such a reduction in the professionalism of, I think, of what you do, having women in these roles, both as someone to hone their athletic skills, but also someone to help mentor them as they're proceeding on through life. And I think this is a loss, and I wanted your thoughts on this.
Well, you know, it's disheartening to hear those statistics. First of all, being a female, minority female, I think we have a lot to offer to the young women that are coming through. I know that for me, it has been a long journey. I can't say that it's been an easy journey. It seems like every time that you go out, you have to understand what you're competing against. It's not just the game. It's perception. If I am at a game and there is a call that I don't agree with, if I speak my mind in reference to the call, it's perceived as kind of how can I say it, you know, stay in your place as a female. Whereas for males, they're able to say a lot more. They're more aggressive in what they say. And it's like, that's just part of the sport. You know, he's passionate about it. So women always have to face those obstacles. And I think over time, it takes its toll. You know, if your heart is not in it, for a lot of females, they'll tend to want to move on and do other things. I think financially, you know, there's definitely a difference as far as pay. For the high school level, you know, it is what it is. For the state of North Carolina, it isn't as great as other states, but it's consistent. So I think, too, with the pay and then other things that women have on their plate that they have to deal with. But I also think that for males, because the male sport has been saturated with coaches, males have found out that I can go over to the female side, be competitive and be successful. And I think for some, they use that as a stepping stone and they kind of bounce back and forth. For others, they get into the sport and then they realize that it's more to it than what you see just on the surface. And then they stay for the long haul. But I think too, just the way that our culture is, for the males when they come in, because they are aggressive, people tend to feel like they are a better coach. The women are a little more passive. They may not be as loud talking, you know, as vocal. And in the sports world, that tends to be a weakness. So it's a double curse for women. It's a weakness if you're not passionate. It's a weakness if you are passionate. You know, you've got to find that happy medium.
And we certainly face that double standard. And as you're saying, fighting that perception on the court and off the court.
Off the court, right.
So many professions. And, you know, your success is really a testament of you can succeed. So what kind of advice would you give to younger professionals to, you know, to stick with it, particularly young women who do want to go into coaching?
Well, know your passion and, you know, definitely don't wear your feelings on your sleeve because they're going to come at you at all kind of angles. You know, you just have to persevere, find your path, and don't let other people discourage you. You know, we are great at what we do. And the main thing is just believing in yourself and continuing on your journey. I've always believed that my destiny is my destiny. And I'm a woman of faith. So I believe that I'm placed for a certain reason. And until I find something different for my purpose, I continue on my path. So that has led me to where I am today. Nothing has come in to say move or do something different. And I'm still striving.
So I want to go back to something we were briefly talking about, which was the NCAA Women's Tournament.
Okay.
When I think of the LSU coach and her passion, there were, and this double standard, there were quite a few that commentators who kind of criticized, you know, she's up and down and you know, she's very vibrant in both in her appearance and in her stature. Mm-hmm. And there was some criticism of that. And that really surprised me because to me, that was passion that motivated her athletes and certainly got her point across and certainly did her well. I mean, they won. But when I was listening to, you know, basically she needs to stay in her lane kind of argument, and I was furious. I was absolutely furious. And what I didn't hear was, you know, well, the men don't act like that. And
right.
But sometimes they do. They said, think Bobby Knight. I mean, sometimes they do. And passion is something that I think should be valued, particularly for someone who is dealing with younger student athletes and in that mentoring role.
Yes, I agree with you. As I stated earlier, you know, it's that double curse when you're passionate, some and not all, you know, they look at the traditional standard, I guess is what I'll say. And this expectation that you just have to be a certain way. Well, passion is passion. And people's passion is they express it differently. So that is okay, as long as you're not crossing my mind, as she would say to Reese, you know, don't be nasty about it, be above board, and it's okay to show your passion. And I don't think that she should be judged for that. Just like the males, they're not judged for it. It's just that that's part of the game. That's what they'll go through and say. Well, it's part of the game for us too.
So I have one final question for you, and can you talk about what it's like to have your daughter play at UNC Pembroke and is now one of our assistant coaches?
That was awesome for me. as a player with my children, they initially did not want to, they did not initially want to go to Pembroke because of me. And they were saying that, you know, they couldn't follow in my footsteps. It was too much. And I had to explain to them, look, your mother is old. So by the time you get there, the majority of the people that were there are probably no longer there. So they both took a different path and then both wound up being at Pembroke. So it was such a joy to see them experience or have an opportunity to experience the same opportunities that I got. And they both enjoyed it. The younger one, Alicia, went to Charleston Southern and then came back and played under Haskins for 2 years, John Haskins. And then Ave or Shatanya, she went to Queens and then came back and played for John Haskins for 2 years. So it was really exciting. It gave me an opportunity to come back to campus more often, supporting my family and sharing with the Pembroke family. And then for her to have the opportunity to be on the coaching staff was just even better. You know, for most of the games, I felt like I was on the sideline. I'm, you know, hey. And I'm like, okay, stay in your place. You know, stay up here as a parent in the bleachers. And I know Dick Christie probably got tired of me yelling out and all that stuff. But I enjoyed myself at those games. And I'm just so proud of them, especially for this year. You know, they had the opportunity to advance. They won the tournament and advanced to the NCAA. So that was such a plus because, you know, the women's program had not made it to that level, I want to say, since we were there last. So that's a long run. And to see them have that opportunity is just, it's just awesome.
Right. And for our listeners who don't know, this year's women, UNCP women's basketball team are the 2023 Conference Carolina Tournament Champions.
Yes. And
those were some great games. That was a great tournament. And you were there.
Yes, I was. I was trying to get down to the sideline, but I, you know, I kind of sat up top because I didn't want to get a technical foul for the team or anything.
Well, I'm sure they appreciate it. But they were some great games, and you know, all shout out to them. They worked really hard this year, and Coach Haskins, they had a remarkable run, and I hope it continues next year. I think a lot of those girls are coming back, and they have a really good chance to be a very, very solid and have another winning team.
Yeah, and I'll say they got a lot of support. I made my way to the bookstore. I think I was there with the last few conference tournament champion t-shirts there. And so I was tearing the bookstore down, trying to get me a shirt, you know. So that was great to have those shirts to sell out like they did. So.
Well, thank you, Dee. I appreciate you. You're sharing your thoughts with us. You're welcome back anytime. And I wish you well at E.E. Smith. I mean, it's great to go back to your old high school yourself.
Yeah.
You've had some wonderful years there, and I wish you the best success.
Thank you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate you all having me.
Of course. Anytime.
Thank you for joining me, Danny, and our guest in this episode of Intentional Compliance in Higher Ed.
This podcast was edited and transcribed by Ronette Sutton Gerber. The content is copyrighted by the University of North Carolina at Pembroke and the Office of Title IX and Clery Compliance.
This podcast does not establish an attorney-client relationship and is not intended to provide legal advice. It is to be used for educational, informational, and non-commercial purposes only, and is not to be changed, altered, or used in any commercial endeavor without the express written permission of an authorized representative of UNC Pembroke.
The views and opinions expressed by the individuals during the course of these discussions are their own and do not necessarily represent the views, opinions, and positions of UNC Pembroke or any of its colleges, schools, programs, departments, or divisions. While reasonable efforts have been made to ensure the information discussed is current and accurate at the time of release, neither UNCP nor any individual participating in this podcast makes any warranty the information presented in the original recording has remained accurate due to changes in legislation, policymaking, research, technology, and/or industry standards.
The beautiful podcast design is the original work of Garrett Gerber, and the wonderful music was graciously written and performed by Jackson Wilds. Thank you both. And thank you for sharing your time with us. Go Braves!